Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my goodness.
There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food. But he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, the master said, we got a good house here. The house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here. Whenever the master said we, he said we. That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick. He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if he came to the house Negro and said, let's run away, let's escape, let's separate, the house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here. I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa. Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them Shetlands nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were. Guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze.
When the master got sick, the steel Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here.
You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masters are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro, our government. I even heard one say our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts, our Navy. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind.
Just as the slave master let you come, the house Negro, to keep the field Negro in check. The same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Tom's, 20th century Uncle Tom's, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful and nonviolent. That's Tom making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts to. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and curse, you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. Nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Quran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts his hand on you, send him to the cemetery. A good religion. In fact, that's that old time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one, presents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf, and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man, and at the same time teachers don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be Ethan Stephen.
Hello, everybody. Greetings. Welcome to the Chef Rob Show. It's been a while since I've done this. I'm going to have a conversation with AC. I want to get his world views on certain things. I just want him to start. Well, go ahead and tell me, well, how was your day, man? What did you see today that just go ahead and made you want to go ahead and soon? I need to talk about it.
Well, actually, I don't think it was a situation where something in particular happened today. But actually, I take that back. The reason that I felt motivated to talk about some of the things that I've witnessed in my years on this planet was because you asked me to. More than anything else, you know, I kind of like you. So, when, you know, be surprised. You know, I spent a lot of my life believing that I had a special insanity as it relates to members of my family. But I'm beginning to understand that the insanity apparently runs rampant throughout. And so I guess you've been afflicted by it too, to even attempt something like this communications thing through computer, radio, broadcasting, whatever you want to call it. So when you asked me to do it, I mean, I wouldn't want to ever bust your bubble, and it's really no problem for me. So I said, okay, cool, yeah, well, you know, Frankie Pentangeli on The Godfather. I said, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just overlooking your brochure here, International African American Foundation, NFP, reading through some of the Articles of Incorporation, and then I guess this would be the mission and vision statements here, huh? What it is that you want, what it is that you're trying to do with the NFP. And so let me just say shout outs to the International African American Foundation while we're on the air.
Shabazz
or Malcolm X, as we know him?
Ronnie Little.
Ronnie Little? No.
Malcolm X.
Oh, yeah, Malcolm Little and the Ronnie Little. Well, anyway, you know, what? A lot of wisdom coming out of the brother, but you know, in a very plain-spoken manner, if you ask me. And, very plain spoken, but he was raised plain spoken, and he lived plain spoken for an extended period of time before he, you know, made the transition to an inspirational figure. And so he continued to speak the words, but you know, when you do something like that, obviously you're getting what I would call straight intellect. I mean, you're not trying to.
You think his words need to be amplified and played a lot more today?
My personal opinion about that is there's no need to truly amplify the words unless you're going to follow them with the necessary deeds. And at this point in time, the necessary deeds might not be something that you'd actually want to experience.
That by any means necessary?
By any means necessary. I like the sound of that. there was a book that I was reading. And if what Malcolm was preaching, or if what Malcolm was espousing was one side of the coin, the material I picked up on the other side, I mean, the material I picked up from this book was definitely, you know, the other side of the coin, in conflict with just about everything that Malcolm was espousing.
So what was the book?
I don't want anybody to be turned off by this, but the name of the book was The Rise of the Fourth Reich, don't be concerned about the word Reich. All it means is empire, basically. So this is the Fourth Empire. Written by a guy named Jim Mars. Never heard of him before. But there are a lot of things in the book that I found quite interesting. I haven't been an avid fan. I haven't been a fan of our 43rd president, George W. Bush. And a lot of what goes on in that book.
What a wonderful guy, man.
All of that. But a lot of what was going on, a lot of the conversation that was going on in the book relates back to his grandfather, Prescott. I found that, you know, I found reaching back out there and find out how ancient, the longevity of the flow of bullshit, if you will.
Flow of bullshit.
Yeah, the Bush bullshit in this case. And it also brought something else to mind. Yeah, you know, I'm watching all of these news programs, MSNBC, CNN. I can't stomach Fox at the moment, you know, Fox broadcast news anyway. But I saw some advertisement involving the Carlyle Group, which is a group that, from my understanding, W's dad and W have had or did work for at some point in time, and now they're trying to suggest that, you know, they can actually do some good for the benefit of mankind and humanity, and I just don't see that happening.
What do you mean, just some good? What do you mean doing some good?
I can't remember exactly what the advertisement was about, but they were talking about letting the Carlyle Group take over some situation to enhance the concept of social justices in this country. Like, yo, you're right, like, you know, they're one of those situations where, once again, they want us to let the fox guard the hen house. Mm. That kind of interested me, especially after reading this book, and in which Prescott Bush and a lot of the other, even more richer families that we've come to know and love, the Rockefellers, the DuPonts, blah, blah, blah. He's mentioned, quite often in the book and his exploits, all for the benefit of him and his family. And so, you know, they're still trying to do the same thing today. You know, further their ill-gotten games, and they're doing it by any means necessary. So, therefore, it seems to me that the only way, and, you know, they're doing it for the benefit of the least. At least that's what the book ascribes to.
Yeah, that's like Ian talking about at least like a small circle.
Well, in this day and age, I think they refer to them as the 1%.
The 1%.
I would suggest to you that the percentage is much lower than that. The 0.1% might be exactly what it is.
So you think they're trying to go ahead and increase that circle or decrease that circle?
Well, no. They're only, no, see, the circle for
miles. They're not allowing everybody to get into that club.
No.
It's an elite club, don't you think?
Definitely. The circle, from my understanding of reading the book, the circle were deeply entrenched in secret societies. I mean, the Bushes' claim to fame during college was the fact that they all went to Yale, basically. And at Yale, they were a part of the Society of the Skull and Bones, which was a secret society based on Freemasonry and blah, 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 you know. And, you know, the thing that always amazes me is that they were espousing great wisdom, but they wanted to share it with so few people. It seems to me that wisdom would be more beneficial the more people that had access to it. I might be wrong about that, but that sounds kind of right to me.
But that's one way, it seems like one way the rich people justify staying rich is go ahead and assist them. Wait, let me finish.
Okay.
Wait, for assisting and going ahead and keeping other people poor.
Well, you know, the one thing that I was just about to add to that, I mean, you preface your remarks by commenting about the rich, and I really don't see it as a money thing, more as a power thing, and what they're trying to do is basically, anytime you suggest that there are entities out there who are intent on running ruining, I mean, the only thing missing from either one of those words is there's the letter I. You know? So the running or ruining the world, you know, when you talk about people who are trying to run or ruin the world, they want as few people to benefit if they accomplish this. Now, that's not to suggest that they're not using their wealth and their power.
But they don't want nobody in that club.
But they use their wealth and power to spread their influence to as many people as possible so they can control those people.
It's sort of like the Augusta golf course. You know, they don't want to let women in there, and they didn't let Negroes in there a little while ago.
Yeah, but see, in this...
It's like the same rich old white boys.
Okay. This is something that, you know, one of my pet peeves, if you'll call it. In the process of what you were talking about was a time where the only thing that a black man could do at Augusta is shine shoes and fetch wary golf balls that traveled off course. And that's all you could do as a nigger at Augusta. And as far as a woman is concerned, well, we can sneak you in there and maybe throw you down on the 18th tee when nobody's watching and pop you real quick and then let you go about your business. But other than that, you had no business being at Augusta for what Augusta was designed for, and that was golf. But see, now, I mean, you know.
I didn't really like golf anyway. I used to ride around the course in La Jolla.
Nothing,
and my buddy used to go ahead and just ride around getting drunk. But anyway.
Yeah. And you still do that now. But nothing's wrong with golf. Golf is a sport. I mean, because, okay, I'm going to tell you the transition.
But you play golf, though, man.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you the transition. When you are younger, you play games like football, baseball, and basketball. When you get older, you can't do that shit, but you still want to stay active. So to ride a cart up to a ball, hit that motherfucker, ride the cart and follow the ball, and basically, you know, do a little bit of walking around the golf course, you know, you can't ride the golf cart onto the green.
I was always wondering.
And they don't like you riding the golf cart all over the fairway. You ride on the sides and so forth.
But I was always wondering if I took a tennis racket out there and just start hitting golf balls all the place, would people get mad?
Well, no. Well, you don't have to. Okay, first of all. You're trying to be humorous. I have no problem with that. But first of all, if you were to take, and we were talking about something like this earlier,
mm-hmm.
if you were to take a tennis racket and take it on a golf course mm-hmm. and start hitting golf balls around with the tennis racket, the people that run the golf course would say, and I quote, "See, that's why we don't want niggas on our golf course." Did I say niggas?
Niggas.
Yeah.
Niggas.
I mean, that's, you know, contrary to popular belief, that is still a very proper, you know, a very prominent word in the annals of the 0.1%, shall we say? Okay, they like that word because it's so, you know, it's so divisive, or as your boy Mario Rubio said earlier this week, divisive. Mario.
Mario's a retard, man. I was trying to find some words to describe Mario, but I just did.
How about
sellout and retard comes to my mind.
Prevaricator. That also works. I mean, you know, he's going to see after the fact, you can say, well, that's not what I meant. But it is my understanding, I'm not from Florida, so I might be wrong about this, but I don't think so. It is my understanding that Mario Rubio used his bona fides as an exile from Cuba, one who was exiled, one whose family was exiled, at least, by the Castro regime, or the fact that you know, not the Castro came down personally and said the Rubios are no longer welcome in Cuba.
Well,
but the actions of Castro
Mark Rubio was saying, hey, he came here before a lot of stuff happened.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Well, they see that was.
How did he screw it all up? But anyway,
no, he didn't screw it all up because he got elected before it came out. He got elected to Congress, and basically, when I heard about this situation, when I became aware of the situation, he was a senator from Florida. He was a junior senator from Florida. So, if you ask me, he had used his, like I said, he had used what he considered his bona fides as a Cuban refugee, a Cuban exile who ran to the United States, fleeing Castro's Cuba.
But
in actuality, his family came here before Castro even took power.
Right.
But it was too late to do anything about it then because Florida had already elected him as a senator. And you know, there's only 100 of them bad boys in this country.
And ain't none of them black.
None of them black anymore? Oh yeah, Barack Obama down. Well, anyway, you know, but like I said, there's only 100 of them, so you know they have to have some push pull. In this situation, if there's only 100 of them, and they're sitting up the Senate is the upper house of Congress. So,
how do you see it as far as going ahead with the political situation? Do you see anything getting better for black people or worse for black people?
It depends on black people.
It depends on black people. What do black people need to do then?
They need to allow, first of all, they need to allow this president to have a second term. Not for the benefit of Barack Obama, not for the benefit of today, but the benefit of tomorrow. Because if Barack Obama doesn't get a second term, you know what the white people going to say. They're going to say, you know, oh, yeah, well, he got elected, but, you know, the people saw that he couldn't do the job, so they threw him out of office. We can't have that. Now, I've said it before. I make the comparison of Barack Obama. I make the comparison between him and other people have made that comparison too, so I'm not the only one. I make the comparison before these people mentioned it, actually, between him and Jackie Robinson in baseball. I mean, for my money, Barack Obama is actually the type of president, actually the type of black man with even his Caucasian roots. Because his mother was white, but of course he's always been treated like he was black. You know, one single drop of blood, and that's all you need to qualify. Come on now, that's still relevant. But he was the perfect type of white man. I mean, or the perfect type of black man to become president. And what he's doing now, showing his stewardship, which I'm hoping will lead to someday, very soon, another black man being able to become president. Now, I recognize, you know, that there were presidents of the Continental Congress before the United States was actually formed, and they were supposedly, allegedly black, or they were actually black. I don't know. I wasn't born back then, but I've heard the stories. It's not like it's been, you know, an integral part of our history learning, but I don't believe any of that either. So, you know, I believe very little of that anyway. So, like I was saying, I think he's the perfect kind of black man to be the first president if you ever want to have another one. And that was the same of Jackie Robinson. Yeah, they could have had Josh Gibson, who was a prolific home run hitter, and they could have had Sideshow Page. But, you know, Josh had baggage. And that baggage wouldn't have been, you know, very pretty if you're talking about the first black man to integrate what was then a white sport, where Jackie Robinson was the perfect. the perfect example of what type of black man you would need to integrate where no, where, you know, and to steal from Star Trek, where no black man had gone before.
Yeah, but he came out recently, you know, supported the gay marriage thing here. And when are we going to have somebody go here, come out and say, hey, look, we're just going to go ahead and stick up for black folks because they've been getting the short end of the stick?
Well, okay, I understand what you're saying. Are you suggesting that you would want Barack Obama to do that?
Of course.
Well, is it okay if he does it after he gets elected for the second time, please?
After the second, we still got to wait longer.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
More waiting.
I think it's more important.
Still more people get hurt and dying, situations.
Okay.
Still more sacrifices.
Yeah, still more sacrifice. Still more sacrifice. If you want this situation to be resolved without violence, this is the way it's going to be done. You're going to have to go through that. These are your options. You're going to have to go through this BS. Barack Obama is not going to be able to speak his mind before this election. And I would hope, of course I can envision it not happening, but I would hope that Barack Obama, after he's elected for the second time, realizing that, okay, well, I don't have to worry about getting elected to be president ever again, okay, that he would make some statements about the situation or the injustices to, you know, for lack of a better word, and I don't think there is one, the injustice is done to black people. I would hope that after he got elected, he would say something, you know, because they're going to boot him out anyway, you know. But under those circumstances, I don't see it being a problem with them electing another black man. My only concern is that the next black man that they would elect would probably be somebody like Clarence Thomas or...
Hello, man. You gave me cramps in my stomach.
Oh, Clarence Thomas is a fucking reality here. Why would you be getting cramps?
Oh, Clarence Thomas. Come
on. Yeah, the Supreme. He's one of, what is it? He's one of nine, damn it. Don't you understand? I was talking about the prestige associated with being one of 100. Talk to me about the prestige of being associated as one of nine.
You could have mentioned somebody that just wasn't a total sellout.
No. That's the only way that they would be able That's the only way that they would be able to counter the effects. Because, like I said, they're, you know, the people that I'm talking about, and it's, you know, it's basically white people. But the people that I'm talking about, they're trying to achieve their goals by any means necessary, just like Malcolm was trying to achieve his goals by any means necessary. As a matter of fact, at one point in time, he stated honest and for true, either you're going to let us do this by the ballot or we're going to do it by the bullet. That's another one of the sayings that he had.
You think it's time to go ahead and really, again, try to go ahead and dust off that message that Malcolm was putting out?
No, I'd be scared of, you know, first of all, I couldn't, in all honesty, espouse that message for the simple reason that I would be a liability when it came to actually, you know, applying that message. I wouldn't be able to get out there. You know, I'm not 20, 21, 22 years old. And if I can't get out there and participate in some stuff like that, like I said, in that situation, I would be a liability because my aim wouldn't be as straight. In order to be a warrior, you have to be physically adept, and I can no longer claim that mantle.
But we always see, when they go ahead and talk about like places like Iran, you always listen to the Ayatollahs. Don't you think you should?
First of all, get
them on that spiritual journey.
Let me suggest that no race, No member of any organization, no situation is monolithic, except for, you know, evil.
Evil. Define evil.
that which operates against good.
Really?
What
is good then? See,
what's good?
With that?
In this situation, when you're talking about masses of people, good is what is best for the most of those people. And I'm not talking about a 51-49% margin here. Into 90-95 percentile.
What the majority agrees on?
What I'm talking about is a reverse of exactly what's going on now. I would suggest to you that what's going on now has its roots in evil, because you're talking about 1% benefiting from this situation, at least in this country, and 99% basically sucking high and tit, that is evil, flat out. So what I'm talking about is the reversal of that situation, maybe 99% benefiting from this situation and 1% sucking high and tit. That would be a better ratio for me.
So how do you change that around so that 99%?
Okay, there's a couple of ways you can do it. You can go through the sacrifice that you're doing now. You can keep, okay, I like what Hillary Clinton said when she was actually when she was running against Obama. You know, but see, her message was basically designed for women, and in actuality was probably basically designed for white women. When she was talking about the 18, she had 18 million votes.
Right.
And she was talking about the 18 million cracks in the glass ceiling. Well, you know, that's a white woman's problem in all actuality. Okay, yeah, there are some black women that benefit from that problem. But before they, see, my thing has always been black women. Before you reach for that goal, and it's a true goal, you know, the glass ceiling, as we call it, where you can't, regardless of how intelligent you are, regardless of how on the ball you are, you can only advance so far in the corporate structure. Black women have another problem to deal with before they even think about before they should even think about that situation. They have the problem of being considered three-fifths human, and if they think that they, you know, they think that that motherfucking little tidbit still isn't around, and they're deluding themselves.
Oh, give me some signs that yet you recognize it's still around.
the simple fact that black people, okay, first of all,
how do you recognize it when it's right there in your face?
How do you recognize? How do you not recognize it when it's right there?
Some people don't. That's what my
No. Everybody recognizes it, Rob. Everybody recognizes it.
You know, when you go here, this is why I'm
not going to. I'm not going to sit up here and let you get by with your delusions. We're talking about good and evil here.
Okay.
You recognize me. These are innate things, innate instincts. This is shit that you're born with. You know, now if you want to be delusional about it and deny this situation, that's on you. But I'm not going to countenance that. I'm not going to allow you to sit up here and be delusional about the situation and expect me to go along with you suffering because of it. You know, like black women do now. They're delusional about the concept that they're still considered three-fifths human. And, you know, and even if it's by association, okay, if the black man is considered three-fifths human, then what does that make you? I mean, because, you know, these white people are playing it that even their white women are less than they are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you, and so therefore, by association, if you are a black woman, you are obviously less than a black man, and a black man is considered three-fifths human by these white people. So what do they actually consider you if they consider the man who is supposed to represent the strength of this organization, of this entity that we call the black race in this country? If you're not a man, then you're less than. So what do they think of you if they still consider him three-fifths human? Only my, you know, personal opinion about this shit, but you know, there's some creeps to it if you look at it.
Okay, so what do you come with? Again, how do you get out of it?
How do you get out of it? That's too many.
It's the mindset of a whole lot of people. It's one of those things, like I said, education. So how do we educate?
That is such a generic term.
Okay.
And the thing about it is, white people are the first ones that are trying to throw the education in your system. But when they talk about education, they're actually talking about indoctrination. They don't want you to. Education is.
It is. Almost all education is indoctrination.
No. All their education is indoctrination. There used to be. Okay. So. When we were sitting over here earlier, we were watching your video, Hidden Colors.
Right.
And it talked about how the Moors, you know, were basically sympathetic to the dark ages that were going on in Europe. And so they brought themselves over from the northern part of Africa, and they went over to the southern part of Europe, and they started imparting on them true knowledge. Straight knowledge. You know, okay, with no strings attached. Here, you need to know this. You need to know math. You need to know. You know. You need to know the sciences. You need to know what this astrology thing, this study of the stars, is real about. I mean, is really about. And they weren't. You know, they weren't offering this, you know, in exchange for something. It was a free imparting of knowledge on a trodden, a downtrodden people. I call that almost, I would suggest that that was somewhat angelic, you know, to just come over here and say, hey, you know, I know y'all down over here, but look, I got some shit that's going to blow your mind. Look at here. Which is basically what they
basically said.
So, you know, I picked that up today. I got that. As a matter of fact, that was something that you dropped off on me by putting that video in, and I haven't finished watching it. I mean, it was extensive, but there's no problem with something being extensive. I haven't finished watching it. I kept watching it, and I can hardly wait to finish it off because what I was hearing was quite interesting.
Yeah, the last part to get you. The last part going to get you.
What? The last part, see?
Yeah, let you check it out.
I don't need to be riled up. I'm already riled up enough. I mean, I was born in the 50s and raised in the 60s and 70s. You know, I don't need to get any wilder than I already am. I've been through the ringer. As a matter of fact, we were talking earlier today. I was telling you the story about Bobby Seals.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was fortunate enough or unfortunate enough, however you want to look at it. I was down in front of the Dirksen building with, you know, some of your other cousins and some people you know from the old neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were down there. And it's always amazing to me that, okay, first of all, it was the Chicago 7, and they were all white men.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tom Hayden, Jane Fonda's ex-husband, he was involved in the stuff.
Tom Hayden.
Yeah, he went on to become a congressman from California. He was married to Jane Fonda.
Is he a football player?
No, he wasn't a football player. Okay. He was a member of the Weathermen's Underground, and he was part of the...
Oh, what they call the terrorists.
Yeah.
Domestic terrorists.
Well, they didn't use that term back then. I forget what it is that they call them. It'll come to me. But he was a part of the hubbub that happened at the 68 convention in Chicago, which I just happened to witness on the news every night in 1968. I was 14 years old until the end of the year.
I remember so, I saw them videos. Man.
Oh, yeah.
Was just kicking ass in those videos.
something that you didn't know. We had an uncle that worked for the city of Chicago. He worked in streets and sand, you know, through streets and sanitation. Uncle Falco. Clinton Cook Sr., Cook Jr., Derek, Felicia, their father.
Oh, okay.
And his wife, Mary. Well, Clinton was working for the Department of Streets and Sanitation, or was that, it was either during the Martin Luther King riots, which happened earlier part of 1968, April-May situation, or the Democratic convention, which happened in August. Oh no, September, October. But he got caught up in one of those situations, and he was coming home from work, and the edict was all niggas off the street, even on the west side, which is kind of hard to do. I mean, the west side was completely nigger back then, but they wanted all niggas off the street. And so he got caught up in a little situation there, and you know, might have received a slight ass whooping or something like that.
Slight?
Yeah. Oh, believe me. Believe me, when I say slight, I mean slight, because most ass whoopings issued by the Chicago Police Department back then, you didn't walk away from. And he managed to walk away from this one, so it can only be labeled as slight. So.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know.
Yeah. So this shit been touching your life, you know, all this motherfucking time, all around you, shit, you didn't know. But something else that, like I said, something else that, that caught my interest today. A couple of things, first of all. Patrick Fitzgerald, Chicago's modern-day Elliot Ness, they call him. He was a U.S. attorney for the district that includes the state of Illinois. And he's been U.S. attorney, if I'm not mistaken, for 11 to 14 years or something like that. I think it's 11. 11 years he's been U.S. attorney. And over 11 years, his successes, you know, the things that they the highlights of his professional career include, of course, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, you know, high profile in 11 years. 15 high profile, trials, prosecutions, 15 high-profile prosecutions involving something.